Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Betfair's Weighed In podcast, the Monday after the week that was the Cheltenham Festival. It's done and dusted. It's in our rearview mirror. I can't believe it. We spent so long building up to it and then it seems to go by in a flash. We are going to be going through, this is your ultimate kind of debrief podcast, essentially. We're going to be discussing the best performances, the good, the bad, and the ugly, the news stories as well. We've got so much to get through and doing it in the company, as always, of Kevin Blake, Brendan Duke, and Tony Calvin. Usual crew back together for our usual podcast on a Monday. Before we go any further, though, Rachel Blackmore. Obviously, Betfair ambassador Rachel Blackmore, building up her serial winners fund. You know the drill with this by now, building all the time up until the Grand National meeting. Every time she has a winner, £5,000 goes in the charity pot for the Injured Jockeys Fund and the Irish Injured Jockeys Fund. But at Cheltenham, her winners were doubled from £5,000 to £10,000. And obviously she had two on the first day. And then of course, Captain Guinness. And then Captain Guinness was also her charity bet. So the winning money from that, from the preview show, also goes into the Serial Winners Fund. So adding all that up together, the Serial Winners Fund is now at £205,000. And of course, we've still got a few weeks left to go before that closes. So exciting times for that. Right. Let's get cracking. Loads to talk about. Quick check-in, I think, before we get into the performances. TC, rate your week as a whole out of 10, please.
0.
Right. Very good. Good start. Is that just from a punting point of view or an enjoyment factor as well?
No, from a tipping point of view. Height
okay.
of embarrassment.
Okay, what about the enjoy? Like, what about the actual festival and racing and the results, etc.? Any joy?
No.
Okay, Brendan Duke, how about you? I don't think you were at the festival, were you? So you've been watching it from home. Your week, we've got a 0 on the board so far. Rate your week out of 10.
I'd say it was about a 6. I managed to burtle out very, very modest profits, nothing to write home about, but I was happy enough about that. And I thought the meeting was going down the Swanee, and then Thursday arrived, and that was a very enjoyable day's race. We all need more Harry Redknapp in our lives. And then Friday, I thought that was very good action as well. So my week and Cheltenham's week were similar. They just about passed muster, I'd say.
Yeah, that would be very much similar to how I would rate my week, as I'm asking everyone. I'll do my own. Probably first 2 days, I think we were sat at about a 3 out of 10. And then courtesy of the Thursday and a good proper horse winning the Gold Cup, probably ramped up to a 5 out of 10, but I couldn't give it much more than that. I drove home Kevin Blake feeling that was an average old fare. And I'm presuming you felt the same. Out of 10, please.
And I don't know. Look, flat 2 days. Thursday and Friday had some moments.
We need a mark, please.
Never caught fire. On we go. Let's get stuck into the horses.
You're not going to give it out of 10?
No one cares.
Come on, you misery. You're a misery this morning. All of you are a misery. Right. Let's get going then. We will start with our Tuesday review, obviously. And we kicked off with the Supreme. And that, I thought, was going to get us off to it in its sort of good mood. Obviously, Rachel Blackmore winning. Brendan aboard Slade Steele, who's decided to go here instead of the Gallaghers to avoid Ballyburn, who we'll get to in due course. And wins in fine style in the end. And of course, an unplaced favourite in Tully Hill meant that I thought, oh, maybe this won't be just standard fare at the Cheltenham Festival.
Yeah, but I mean, this was an exciting race, in fairness. The HDB, I mean, mad props to him. He seems to do this every year. You're sort of concerned about stable form, and then he just gets them absolutely bombing for Cheltenham. But you do need a bit of luck in life as well. I mean, say Slade Steele managed to avoid Ballyburn, but also probably more significantly got the rain, which was absolutely crucial, because he seemed to outstay Mystical Power to me on the run in, who we had flagged up as a very much a speed horse. Slade Steele, I was starting that when that one, I was sort of going, I'm not so sure about whether I actually know anything about this, because I didn't rate that race in Navan. that it won, that there were three Cheltenham Festival winners in. So that was a kind of a narrative for me throughout the week. I was there, oh God, how could I not have rated the form of that race? But we get things wrong, we move on. Yeah, really tough horse. It's hard when you sort of lose momentum at the back of the last to re-rally, albeit against a horse who was a suspect stayer in the conditions, but really good attitude. You'd imagine he's going to make a very good chaser given the hotel he resides in. And onwards and upwards, the Slade Steel.
Indeed. Onwards and upwards we go. Arkle time, Kevin. Gaelic Warrior went off the 2-1 favourite with all the question marks we spoke about beforehand, all the unknowns, the hood on, and then he delivers like that and puts together a much more professional effort to win an Arkle. He's a real talent. What does the future hold for Gaelic Warrior now?
The Champion Chase next year, you'd imagine. Like you say, much more professional. Was very worried about him beforehand. He was quite fired up, more so than he was at Leopardstown. But once he was let loose and cantered down to the start, he seemed better. He was a much easier ride for Paul. Really punchy shout to put on the hood, as we spoke about, seemed to have a positive impact. Slightly right, no worse. Was helped early on by Founder 50 racing upsides, and which I thought was incredible. But ultimately won really well. And I think the general vibe was that he was the most talented horse in the race, and it was just a case where he was going to give himself the chance to show it. He very much did, and on he goes. Yeah, one of the best 2 mile prospects around.
Yeah, absolutely. We then had an excellent reception as Chianti Classico won for obviously local trainer Kim Bailey, and it was telling story of the day that was pretty much the best reception. That was about as most exciting as the race day got, despite the fact that obviously the champion hurdle was next. TC went the way of State Man, ever the professional, gets the job done from Irish Point, of course, another avoiding maybe where he should have gone in terms of a stayers hurdle, ended up here in a champion hurdle, and then Lucia back in third. But it was just business as usual for State Man. But I fear we will look back on this and think this was a very below par champion hurdle.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it was running very testing ground. I think the time was 4:13. State Man was ridden to win by a couple of lengths, which he did. Irish Point ran well. Lucia, 140 rated horse in third, obviously anchors the actual form down. So yeah, I don't think we learned anything, and I don't think we learned much about the second and third, given the manner that the race was running. But he did what he did, and he didn't need to be anywhere near his best to do it.
No, I would concur with that last line specifically. Go on, Brendan.
I just wonder, what do you think about the tactics on Irish Point? It seemed to me like, again, an absolute triumph for Connections. They thought they could win the stairs hurdle with one bullet, and they were right. So they get this free shot at the champion hurdle. But it seemed like the way they rode the horse in the race and afterwards, it's like they got out and said, oh, well, if State Man runs his race, he's going to win. We either need him to fall or to, for some reason, underperform, and we'll pick up the pieces. Which, okay, I totally get it. But I mean, this is a champion hurdle. Surely they should have gone out and tested his stamina more. Now, I don't think it would have made any difference to the result, but it was almost like they came back in and went, oh, that was a great prep for Aintree. It's the champion hurdle. I thought it was very, very, very strange how subdued they were. It was like they were beaten before they went out.
I don't know, when you've got a force like State Man to reckon with, maybe you do just look at, I don't know. I know what you're saying, but I suppose it's a tricky one, isn't it, with other things down the line, and you think you can't beat him. How do you ride the race? It is an interesting one. And as I say, I mean, I was stood on the parade ring steps for the whole of Tuesday, and the State Man got a polite sort of reception, but it wasn't really a champion hurdle reception that you would hope for. And part of that, I think, is due to the fact that obviously in the next race, Kev, we see Lossie Mouth Dot up at odds of 8-13, taking a grade one in the mare's hurdle, doing it in fine style, I suppose, from Tell Me Something Girl, ran an excellent race. Hispanic Moon also back in third. But Kev, like, she should have run half an hour before, shouldn't she?
Yeah, same again. Very forgettable grade one at the pinnacle of national racing. Best mare won, easy. Without really kind of being asked to do much more than that. I can pretend to be more enthusiastic about it if you like, but it wouldn't be genuine.
Everyone talking about, I'm with you. Everyone talking about her, going to the champion hurdle next year, because of course that's what they've said they're going to do. Mare's hurdle this year, champion's hurdle next year. If they have Stateman and potentially even a Ballyburn from the same yard, obviously different owners, goes without saying. But Brendan, I think it was you who mentioned the fact that Lossiemouth could just be in this race for the next 4 years.
Yes, what about the bar, Vanessa? What about the
The
bar?
bar, they want
I
another
know.
bar.
Yeah. I was very taken aback with the reaction afterwards, because I just assumed we would have seen her in this race for the next 4 years, and that's kind of still my hunch. But it would, I mean, Kevin will probably get onto this later, because I feel for him nearly more than anyone, because he's a boxing fan and a National Hunt fan. So if there's any two groups of sports fans who get fluffed more, I don't know who they are, in terms of, oh, we'll have these clashes, we'll have these clashes, and they just never happen. So I just assume that she will continue to win mayor's hurdles to beat the band, and we'll never see her in a champion hurdle, but hopefully I'll be proven wrong.
We haven't
Thank
even
God.
mentioned Constitution Hill about next year. I mean, Ballyburn, Constitution Hill, State Man. Are
Yeah.
we really going to chuck Lossiemouth in against those three if they're all fitting well?
And everyone talking like that's going to happen. I'm with Brendan. It's more than a hunch for me that she'll be back in this race next year, and we'll be moaning again.
Yeah, and as we always say, I'm not going to blame the connections. I do the
No.
same thing. The problem's the
Right.
program.
Yeah. Quick mention for Corbett's Cross TC, absolutely dotted in the National Hunt Chase. Incredible performance, really, given his winning distance. What was it in the end? Nearly 20 lengths, no, 17 lengths in the end for Emmett Mullins. Derek O'Connor in the saddle. I mean, what would he have done in the Brown Advisory? Who knows? That's the race again he should have been in, Kevin Blake. But the performance was, it was one of the wild performances of the week, in fairness.
I actually felt for Brendan here, because when he was going past the line, I had Grangeclear West on my mind, what he would have done at the festival. Another first time Hood winner. Actually, I had Jane Williams Racing. I'm assuming it was Chester Williams, DM'd me to bring it up here. He actually said, first time Hood, he said, should we be declaring first time earplugs, or earplugs in general? Because he said they have an equally possibly positive effect on
Pacifying.
performances. I mean, I'm not sure we're going to go down that route, but I don't know what everyone else thinks. I said I'd bring it up here. He said,
Yeah.
should we be declaring earplugs?
Yeah, I wrote about it years ago. Like, pretty much everything that Willie's wears earplugs. But it's one of those things. What's an earplug? You have actual earplugs you go to the shop and buy, or you can shove a load of cotton wool in, which plenty of people do. So I don't know how practical it is, but yeah, like the and that was the thing with the Willie Mullins head hoods thing, is that the data isn't going to necessarily tell you everything, because whether or not they wore earplugs is a variable in that mix. But I did put it forward a few years ago, and that was the general response I got.
Okay, let's move on to Wednesday. And if Corbett's Cross was quite a wow moment of the week, then we had a couple to kick off Wednesday. We will start obviously with the Gallaghers and Ballyburn, Kev. I know a short price, I know he was just better than the rest, I know he's beaten big price horse in second and all of that. But in terms of strip all that away, in terms of a performance of raw talent and ability, this was one of the moments of the week.
Yeah, look, the kind of the general view, I think, it was certainly mine, was that he was the best novice herder of the lot. It was just the case whether he could carry it over the trip, and he had absolutely no issues doing so. Would have won the Supreme at his ease, I suspect. He already hammered Stayed Steel at the DRF. Just again, yeah, be beating four stablemates, the two British contenders, drunk turning in. Again, we all love to see, really, really good horses, and this fella is. He's probably as exciting as there is, but yeah, as a spectacle, it was fairly uneventful, I dare say.
It was indeed. As really, in a way, was the Brown Advisory, Brendan, with Factor File doing a similar job in terms of best horse in the race wins. Pretty simple. But I mean, I'm not even going to pretend not to be delighted with this performance. This was my novice performance of the week. I love this horse. I love what he does. I love how he jumps and travels. I just think he's got the world at his feet. And I'm so excited about him going forward, Brendan.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, he is a huge, first of all, delighted for you, Vanessa. You latched on to him very early. You were very vocal about it. So if he was your equine crush, I suppose Monty Starr is my equine crush. And I have to say that I did think there was some jeopardy in this race through the run. Maybe you didn't have a moment, but I thought I had a chance with Monty's turn of form because your horse had been inclined to jump out to the right. He'd been a bit keen. Like he's... We saw in his novice chase win in Leopardstown when he sort of was inclined to get in short, but then when Walsh asked him at the last couple, he really winged him. He has a serious jump in him, but he seems to be happy enough to just kind of mess around a bit at a few of his fences at the same time. So at the turning for home, and I thought, well, Monty's is a dour stayer. This horse has been a bit keen. I've got a life here. And then those last two jumps from back to five, just superb. Put the race to bed in no time. Maybe it's possible I've overrated Monty Star and Giovinco was close in third, but I suspect that the winner is just a very, very super talented horse with a lot more potential. I mean, yeah, and quite right. I mean, how many runs has he had in his life? Six or something? I don't know. But he hasn't had very many runs. He's still learning on the job, and yeah, a massive engine. I enjoyed that race, though. I thought it was interesting if you backed something else in the race. Certainly interesting.
I'd actually be the same as Brendan. I think people might have got a shade carried away here. Like Giovinco, we know plenty about him. He's rated 146. He's beaten six odd lengths in third. Like Factifile was doing plenty wrong, and just sheer ability got him there, I thought. He was over racing. He was jumping out to his right. He's a very, very good horse, but I think they kind of got away with it at the trip, myself. And I definitely wouldn't like to be climbing aboard the Gold Cup train with him just yet. I think he'll have more questions to answer about his stamina in deeper company than this. That like I put up a poll there about the three winners of the longer trip novice chasers, and like it was absolutely a landslide in favor of Factifile over Grey Dawning and Corbett's Cross. And that actually really surprised me, which is rare for these polls. I thought it was much more competitive than that. But look, time will tell. He's the one people have latched on to, and it'll make for interesting stuff next season, I suspect.
I think I'm with you in terms of the fact that I think he is very much still a work in progress. I'm not like hailing him not as that. I think he's got a habit of doing, he's done it twice now. He sort of dropped, he can travel all right, and then he seems to latch on to the bridle in a certain point in a race and get a bit keen, and then that doesn't help him. But that'll just come with age and experience. I love him, but I love Mon. I'm a big fan of Monty Starr as well, so I'm taking a more positive view on the form than Kevin is. I know Giovinco is back in third, but I know they were very hopeful of him in a Ultima off this way. I don't know. I don't think it's going to look that bad. Anyway, let's not hang around on him. Let's roll on because we're going to skip over Langerdan because we will do him in news. When we discuss that. So let's just keep focusing on equine performances. Champion Chase, obviously, TC, all about the disappointment of El Fabiolo, the eventual fall, his demise, meaning that it opened up the door for Captain Guinness to get his big day in the sun. This was it, Captain Guinness. He always shows up. I think you would flag that up, hadn't you, TC, that he might be an each way bet in this. But Captain Guinness beating Gentleman Demi, beating Funambul Savola in third. Again, forgettable Champion Chase, right?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we'll come on to the Nicky Henderson form in the news section. Obviously, we lost John Bonn, El Fabiolo. Everyone was saying he had a mistake in him. He had a couple in him here, and obviously, he ended its race. Poundland accepted very quickly. Captain Guinness tanked through the race, was travelling all over Edwardstone. Edwardstone was beaten when he fell. And for one horrible moment, I thought Gentle Demi was going to come and do Captain Guinness on the running. But I mean, he had the form to finish placed at the very least, didn't he, Captain Guinness? And he ran just a great race, didn't he? And but obviously, as a champion chase, it won't be ranked among the greats, will it?
No, but there's been a few of them. Put the Catalans champion
A
chase.
few of them trained by Henry de Bramhead, fair play to
Yeah,
them. Like these
exactly.
horses are the definition of the fella turning up for work every morning on time, and
Yeah.
enough time passes and he gets over promoted. Like the
Well,
Specialty Arrow was the same, and you just have to say fair play. He turned up with his horse, who looked overmatched, in great shape on the day. One fell over, or in this case, made a bad mistake, and was pulled up, and away he went. Delighted for them. Well done to them. Great for
as
the horse.
Ruby says, you know, you have to buy the lottery ticket. You have to be in it to win
Gotta
it.
run. You gotta
So
run.
many people,
You
you know,
gotta
I was really
run.
surprised when I was talking to a jockey about just the fox hunters actually, and I said, you know, like the fox hunters, it's a pathetic renewal of the race. And he said, well, you know, why would we run here when we're just going to get beaten and all of this, and by a JP horse, basically the JP horse. And of course, that's A, not how that race worked out. But also, it's just depressing to hear that that's people's view. And I said to him, but you've got to be in it to win it. Look at a Captain Guinness. Look at Jeremy Scott's horse in the mares. Like, you've got to be in it. It's so frustrating to hear that view. Brendan, what were you going to add in there?
No, I just think again the HDB. I'm in awe of the man. I mean, what is it, about 3 or 4 years ago, this horse pulled up in Tipperary and he had a heart problem. I mean, it looked all over. But I think as a reward to Captain Guinness, Henry should never ask him to run in Leopardstown anymore. He just doesn't like
Oh.
Leopardstown. So as a reward for winning the champion chase, he should never be sent back to Leopardstown.
Yeah,
Okay.
it was a brilliant training performance to get him back, wasn't he? The DRF was a prep run for this, and obviously coming back from that defibrillating heart or whatever it was, is like I said, he's nursed him back brilliantly.
Right. Thursday was the day the festival basically perked up a little bit, and I'm very hopeful that Brendan, you've sung for your supper so far, but TC and Kevin, let's hope that you two perk up here talking about this day. Grey dawning in the Turners to kick things off at TC. Obviously, the start of an excellent day for the Skelton Yard. Beats Ginny's Destiny. How did you rate this renewal of the Turners? We've spoken about underwhelming certain races, but will this fare pretty well going forward when we look back on it in 12 months' time?
I think so. I mean, obviously, the first two were very closely matched going into it. Very different in the betting. I mean, Nichols had Stay Away Faye was just a ridiculous drifter earlier on in the week, and all the vibes were very negative about Ginny's Destiny coming into this. I mean, there was a lot of rumours
Right.
going around that he might not even run,
Oh, right. I missed
but
all of that.
he ran very well. I think Grey Dawning is a very, very good horse. Obviously. Brilliant week for Skelton. We'll come on to the fact, should he have even been there in the first place? We'll come on to that later. But no, I take a very positive view of that form. And obviously, Grey Dawning, he's obviously got proven form over 3 miles, and he's got plenty of options next year. But yeah, I take a very positive view of that race.
I just want to give a quick mention. We're trying to do just one person per race here, but just a quick mention, Brendan, to Fasal Vega. You know, he was such a hype talking horse, delivered all those ones next to his name. And then this season has gone completely Pete Tong for Fasal Vega. He went off the 5-2 favourite here, which I was surprised about given the comments coming out of Willie's from those press mornings in the build up was very negative in regards to this horse, whatever race he went to. Not It's not trip related, it's him mental, physical related. What next for him, or where next for him? Can they get him back?
Well, I mean, I imagine he'll go to Punchestown. What else are they going to do with him? But they're certainly starting to look like there's a big hole in him. There's no doubt about that. He's carrying himself awkwardly. Now, he always did that to a degree, in fairness, but his jumping has just got progressively worse as the season has gone on. But I must have missed these comments in the build-up, these negative comments from Willie Mullins, because all I ever see, and indeed Tony Mullins was on before the race, big enough, all I ever see is this horse is the best horse in the yard, the way he works. So that was interesting. I didn't know that
Yeah,
they were
I
going to.
remember him saying maybe 2 weeks beforehand that he'd basically need to hit every marker between now and
Yeah.
then to be
Yeah.
allowed to run,
Right.
basically. That he
Okay.
didn't think he
Okay.
was himself. But like you said, there were bullish reports prior to the DRF, but they seemed to take a left turn thereafter. I think you just go back hurdling with him. Don't think he's the most natural chaser. It doesn't seem to be getting better. That'd be the way I'd be thinking, but we'll let Willie sort it out.
Okay, let's stick with you, Kevin, and move on to the Ryanair Chase, won by Protectorat. That team again, Harry and Dan Skelton, obviously, returned at 17-2 and beat the horse that went off favourite in the end in Envoy Allen, 9-4. Conflated was back in third. And Banbridge, obviously, unplaced. Kevin, just in case you didn't already know, Banbridge doesn't like soft ground.
Thanks very much. Yeah. look, big day, took the chance, didn't work out. There you go. Try again at Aintree. Yeah, well, fair play to Dan Skelton here. Good effort. They readjusted mid-season with his trip. This race is often accused of kind of being a consolation race for those that aren't good enough for the Champion Chase and those that don't quite stay the Gold Cup trip. And this kind of result sums it up a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It does. Yeah.
9-year-old beating 2 10-year-olds, and look at he was really tough. I don't want to be too negative about it. Turned up and won what is billed as a championship race. So, well done to Dan. He had an excellent week, as we will continue, as we will elaborate on later for the number of runners he had. He had an unbelievable return, and really stuck his hand up. So fair play to Dan Skelton. I mean that genuinely.
Let's move on to the Stayers Hurdle. Brendan obviously won by Tiupu, and when he won back in December at Fairy House, we heard the dreaded words "straight to the festival," and we bemoaned it on this podcast. And then he goes straight to the festival. The team know now that he's best fresh. They kept him for this one day in mind, and bang, in he goes, and he's a well-backed favourite at 5-4 for the race, beating Florian Porter and, of course, Home by the Lee, who ran well, as Kevin suggested he may well do. In a way, Brendan, I love this result because it was pinpoint training. It's people being right, except, it was great. Like, I loved it in a way. But in another way, I hated it because it's an advert for straight to the festival. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. No, I do. Well, I suppose then you got a little antidote to that in the Gold Cup the
Yeah,
next day when
I did.
Gallopin had the extra run and Willie was there. Oh yeah, no, we love running our horses. He didn't exactly do that with his previous multiple Gold Cup winner. But anyway, look, history is written by the winner, so it's totally fine. I would be inclined to agree with your first angle that just a great job from Gordon Elliott identified that. He had the standout performer in this division. Well, probably the two standout performers, but he could win it with one bullet if the horse got his conditions. The weather gods did their bit. They had him absolutely bombing for the race. He was able to make a couple of squiffy errors at his hurdles and just snap back on the bridle. And he was ultimately much the best, wasn't he?
Yeah, I can see why they did what they did. Haven't had a really good look at him there. Like he's not over big, and like he was quite light. I'm sure he was galloped within an inch of his life to be ready for this now. But he's probably not the type of horse he could run every 3 or 4 weeks, I'd say. So, I don't think it was straight to the festival for the sake of it. I think they were playing the horse as such, and geez, he was strong in the market. I imagine being told he would have went off 5-4 a few weeks before the race. And it was ultimately good, bit messy race. Geez, it was slowly run. Geez, it was slowly run, and that really played to his strengths as well. But job well done. Gordon had a pretty, I'd say he was headbutting the wall there after the first 2 days. So it was great for him to get a pick up, because this, like everyone, this the one that matters most, and those first 2 days wouldn't have been fun.
No, just one last thing to mention, TC, on that day was the Kim Muir. Obviously, we saw a great result in the Mare's Hurdle, Mare's Novices Hurdle. We should just give a nod to Golden Ace and Jeremy Scott. That was one of the results of the festival for sort of the
Yeah,
story
can I
behind
say
that.
something very quickly on that, Vanessa?
Yeah.
It wasn't picked up at all afterwards, from what I could see. I wasn't watching the telly, but fourth best horse at the weights, you
Oh.
know, because of this penalty system. You know, the three that she beat had the 5 pound penalty for doing their best and winning listed or graded races, and they all got beat by one that didn't have a penalty, was getting 5 pounds. I think that penalty system needs to be looked at. Immediately. I don't think it, I know what the intention is. The intention of it when it was put in was to potentially incentivize really good novice mares to run in the open novices, the Supreme or the Ballymore or whatever. But the penalties aren't having that function, and we have a situation here where the fourth best at the weights wins. The mares program gets a lot of airtime. This is not what the mares program is designed to do. It's not meant to reward clever campaigning at a graded level, and it was clever campaigning, and I take my hat off Jeremy Scott. It was a super result, but bigger picture stuff that can't be allowed to happen again, can it? That's not right.
Right. Okay, that is interesting. TC, the one thing I wanted to mention to you is if we're talking about Tiupu being pretty well backed on the day, the other horse that sure I want to know how well backed. I know the way you're thinking was for the Kim Muir. Excellent ride by Derek O'Connor to deliver this Gavin Cromwell JP horse, but everywhere you went, everyone just told you that the certainty of the day almost was I know the way you're thinking. Was that how it transpired market-wise or not? Is that just chat?
No. It was just all one-way traffic, wasn't it? Very similar to Hooper. Like, unfortunately, I was able to lay it at 2.38, 2.36 pre-race to Hooper, and I just thought that was madness. But yeah, fair play to Hooper, and it was probably an even bigger punt on the one in the last. I mean, not in kind of like volume wise, but going off at 13-8 in a race like that and winning as he did, there was the money was right on the Tuesday, on the Thursday even.
Imagine it being a fly on the wall in British Handicapper HQ when this race was panning out after they let him in to the Kim Muir off 1.45 when I think there was a heavy odds on shot beat when the weights came out and he was allowed in a 1.45. But there you go. We'll talk about the other side of the coin a little bit later on, but they'll be full of regret over that one, I suspect.
We yeah,
will.
I mean,
Let's
it was just it's
keep
sorry. Okay, but it was one of the great punts, though, wasn't it? Someone said to me that it reminded them of Unsinkable Boxer. Now, I don't think Gavin Cromwell is he's a very understated character, but you could kind of say him whispering to Derek O'Connor, just don't fall off here, and
kicking.
because that was the way he rode him, wasn't it? I mean, this was just sensational stuff.
I kind of love it. I love it in a way. I love the like certainty, the belief, the like, I don't know. I love it in a way. A naughty side of me loves it. On we go to the Triumph Hurdle first race on day four. We're keeping kicking here. Kev, we will come to you here. Madborough wins this for JP again. Mark Walsh in the saddle this time. Obviously for Willie, beating Cargese, also from the same stable. Good run from Sal, but back in third. A lot of chat about this horse afterwards, being talked up pretty highly. Are you buying into that after this performance?
Well, look, my inherent skepticism about Triumph Hurdles, just because
Always.
it's a big old gap to jump up. But gee, this is a beautiful horse. Like at Leopardstown, like I came away from that thinking, God, we'll even run him in the Triumph because he's just such a kind of a big chasing sort, like beautiful horse. And they ran, and like the ground had gone very testing at this stage, and they went a good gallop. And it was not a typical Triumph as such. And you'd have to be delighted with him. Look, I think the chat is he's going to go straight over fences next season, which is exciting because that's his job. And Jesus, in the first half of the season, you wouldn't like to be giving him the 4-year-old allowance over fences, my God. So yeah, that's exciting. Gorgeous. Yeah, and can't wait to see him over a fence.
I sort of hadn't quite got excited about him until I kind of, well, I'm not that excited about him yet, but I sort of read all the comments and then watched the race back and I was like, wow, people really rate this. So that'll be intriguing. We're only really doing the graded races here, Brendan, but I did just want to give a quick mention to the County Hurdle. Absurd, obviously coming through, slicing through from the back of the field under Paul Townend for Willie Mullins. Obviously boring Willie Mullins sort of winning everything type angle, but not boring in the sense of the ride this horse got. And also the aftermath, like when you look back at the coverage or watch back the ITV coverage from Friday, and the sheer joy on Paul Townend's face of being able to ride one like that and get it up to win in a county hurdle versus what is really just sheer relief after galloping de Champs. There was a real contrast of reaction from the man in the saddle, I thought.
Well, I mean, I suppose in terms of jockeyship, these are the most challenging races, particularly in Cheltenham when the ground gets deep, track position is important and trying to get a run through. And as you say, it was so dramatic cutting through the field. Yeah, I can see. I didn't actually notice reaction afterwards, but I can see that it would give you more satisfaction, and very satisfactory for the owners of this horse. Win an Ebor and win a County Yard, get a little trip down to Melbourne in between. Good fun horse to have, isn't he?
Brilliant.
God, and considering how delicate flowers these National Hunter horses are, Brendan, I just don't know how this horse managed it. You know, so many away games, and man, and you know, he was running in Killarney in May, and he manages to push on
That's it,
through, go
actually,
to
because
Australia, go to York,
he's only
and
six, isn't he? So there's plenty of, what, is he six or seven? He's still a young horse, isn't he?
six. Yeah,
Six,
yeah.
yeah. Brilliant.
There was a few of those, like a triumph for adventurous campaignings this week, and he was definitely one of them. How many rides did Paul Townend have in handicaps all week?
One and
One.
done.
Bang.
One and done, flagged up by a few shrewd people, I must say. And yeah, I was delighted. I loved his reaction afterwards. It really, as somebody who watches a lot of those post-race interviews, Paul in the saddle, winning all these big races, it was noteworthy what a kick he got out of that. Let's move on. Albert Bartlett time. This was a result for the bookies TC because, of course, Stella Sori winning at 33-1, the Jukebox Man at 18s, both front running prominent rides. And that's where they stayed throughout the whole of the race. Dancing City was back in third. Reading Tommy Wrong wasn't placed. Went off the 2-1 favourite in the end. So this was a bit of a turn up for the books, as we see regularly in this race over the last few years. Or well, not few years,
Yeah,
but.
it's probably notable for the shortest in running chin job. I think the Jukebox Man hit 102. I think Mystical Power earlier in the week hit 105.
How did he not go 101? I really
Hey,
don't understand. I don't know how he didn't go 101.
like I said, he's 102. But
heartbreak.
yeah, he was. He was obviously. But Harry had a winner earlier in the week, didn't he? Obviously Brendan referenced that race earlier in the season in December, that five runner race for up three Cheltenham winners. So yeah, I mean, yeah, it's the Albert Bartlett, isn't it? It was a strange one. A lot of horses were beaten very, very early in that race, and obviously it was a lot of rain on the morning of on overnight into Friday, made it a thorough test. And yeah, for up that one, it was gettable because, like I say, he had the graded form against very, very good horses. But yeah, I think 33-1 was his price, wasn't it?
The old cliche, the never say die attitude from Sam Ewing in the saddle. There was a point where, like, what the 102 shot, the Jukebox Man, just looked like he was over the line, as you say, Kev. And you look back at Sam's ride when you're watching the replay, and he is just, it's like defeat is not an option here. I will get up. And he did. Absolutely mega from him. Right, let's move on to the big one. We can give this a bit more airtime. Galloping Deschamps, right winner of the Gold Cup, back-to-back Gold Cups, went off 10-11 in the end and beat Jerry Calonne and Corrick Rambler, as predicted by many, galloping on from the back of the field into a place. But best race of the week won by the best steeplechaser in training currently, and for the best trainer and best jockey as well. Is that's the result we wanted, isn't it, Brendan?
Yes, I saw people in the aftermath though saying, "What an epic Gold Cup!" I mean, maybe I'm missing something, because as I said to you, when I was watching back to file, I thought, "Oh, this is interesting." But I'm watching this Gold Cup. He jumps off, takes up a position in third, pings the first two fences, so he's able to establish that position. And from then on, I mean, I know this sounds like after, but from then on, I was just convinced he was going to win. I don't know, did he ever trade any sort of a price in the run? I mean, I doubt it. I feel like you were always on good terms with yourself. It got a bit messy turning for home with the loose horse. I grant you, I was delighted to see Jerry Calonne running so well. A deep ground Gold Cup, he always looked made for that. And clearly, he's better than his performance in the Savills Chase. So I'd say it's good form, but I didn't think it was an epic Gold Cup. In terms of, I didn't think many horses had a chance in it from the time the flag jumped. The winner's just exceptional, much the best. Does everything right now in terms of jumping and settling, and yeah, just completely dominant. But he could go on and do a third one, given his age profile. So we'll wait and see what the novices from this season have to say about that.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I think I'm with you, Brendan, in terms of watching it. I didn't watch it, and as we spoke about so much beforehand, there were so many horses you could make a case in behind the absolute short price favourite in Galloping de Chance. But in the race itself, it didn't really live up to the excitement. As in, I'm definitely of agreement with you. Other than the loose horse, at every stage, I just thought Galloping de Chance just wins this. There wasn't really much to suggest otherwise. TC, is that the way the sort of market read as well?
Didn't watch it live on Betfair. So I don't know what happened in running, but as Brendan said, I can't believe he hit any fancy prices.
No.
Didn't need to be at his best to win that race. Probably wouldn't be a patch form wise on his, on his saddles win or. Always winning, even in the race last year. But yeah, very, very good performance. Didn't need to reach best. Was running a really, really slow time, wasn't it? So it
Was
was
it
really, really deep ground. I think it was over 7 minutes, was it? Not many.
7.5 slow
Yeah.
by 19.14?
I
I don't
th I think I think I read Simon Rowlands. I think that might have been the slowest one since Desi's Gold Cup.
It's like I said,
Interesting.
it's look, we didn't learn anything else, but obviously Jerry Colomb was very well backed and ran a cracker. Corrox Rambler, he'd be slightly worried if that left it, Mark. But then again, we haven't got the Grand National till April the 13th. I don't think it is. So, got the best part of a month to get over it. But race panned out pretty much as expected, didn't it?
It did, Kev. But I suppose in terms of just focusing in on this horse as a racehorse, he is so likable. They've raced him plenty. He's been beaten. He's come back. He's had hard races. He's had flashy performances. And then when you watch him up the hill, the way he pings the last. And I suppose what I really am starting to love about him is that real strength in it, sort of mental strength he has to win. He has his ears pinned back, and I noticed that Fast or Slow drifted across, obviously on the run-in, and he would have been entitled, as most horses would do, to waver across to the loose horse a little bit if he'd wanted to. But instead, he's just head down, ears back. I'm going to win this race straight as a die. I don't know. I came out of this. Yes, he was entitled to win it. Yes, he won it in the style in which we expected him to. But I like him more now than I ever have before.
Yeah, look, proper champion hasn't been spared this season at all. This was a well-run Gold Cup on horrendous ground. And like I say, he didn't waver. Like he always looks better in the second half of his races than his first. That jump at the last was tingle up the spine stuff for me. And he's just a smasher. He's a smasher. And I really hope that that he's in the same sort of form next season and he can come here and try and emulate Best Mate because I think he'll be well able. And we have some lovely novices coming through. And yeah, that's a performance. We looked at the race of the week, thought it was the most, to me, the most engaging, exciting race in the week. I enjoyed it as a race through it. Like I thought there was plenty going on. I was surprised to see Harry Cobden make the move he did on Brave Man's Game. Round the outside into a well-run race, Jungle Boogie at one point looked to be absolutely running away. Look at his finishing effort hasn't translated, but geez, I'd be watching him back at a shorter trip. Like that was particularly eye-catching. And there was for a moment you thought, God, could Corrox Rambler get ahead of steam up here? Didn't quite do that, but he still ran great. So engage me, I enjoyed it, and a proper champion won.
Yeah, absolutely right. A proper champ. Let's move on to a few of the topics then. A proper champion, one trained by the very Mullins, and of course, it was all about Willie Mullins last week. 100 winners at the Cheltenham Festival, an incredible feat. And how, in a way, obviously they're expecting that to come with El Fabiolo on the day. It didn't, and instead it came in the bumper. Patrick Mullins riding his father's 100th winner at the Cheltenham Festival was pretty special. And the whole family there to celebrate it as well. But 9 winners across the week, and Mullins's dominance of the festival continues. Yes, we can celebrate it, but there are some negatives in and around it as well, Kev. And you have written about that and the Irish dominance overall in your latest column at the races column.
Yeah, not so much saying it's a huge negative. It is what it is, but it's important to highlight it and talk about it. Like Willie had an unbelievable week. He needed huge numerical power. You know, over 20% of all the runners were trained by Willie, and he had all the horsepower to go with it. And he had, you know, a week. You know, it sounds mental to say it, but largely in line with expectation in terms of winners. And like one of these years, everything will drop for Willie, and he'll have literally 14 or 15 winners this meeting. Because there's been, I'm deadly serious. Like there's been a couple of times in the last few years where things have gone really well, but there's a few races you could look at and say, wow, that could have been another one. So like I just raised that possibility, which is slightly terrifying, a little bit depressing, depending what way you come at it. Like I see. Jeez, I just see a lot of denial in British National Hunt Racing at the minute, and you know, quite a few pointing to it. Well, this is Willie Mullins' domination, that Irish domination. You know, I stripped out all of Willie Mullins' runners and put those results up there. You know, it still reads broadly similarly. You know, I don't know how you even start to try and fix this, because the wheel's been turning for over a decade and no one's wanted to adjust it. And now, the bird is so far off in the distance. Where, how do you get it back? But anyway, I could talk about this for an hour. You don't want to hear it for an hour. You have to just take your hat off to Willie. He's exceptional at every stage of the process. Particularly like the state, the point to which he has sewn up the recruitment of young National Hunt horses, is what makes an end or a reduction in his dominance, you know, so difficult to see in your mind's eye. You know, they just do such a good job, and I wound up a fair few British trainers privately and publicly by questioning the hunger. They can disagree if they like, but if it's not hunger, what is it? Is it lack of ability? I think that'd be a more bitter pill to swallow for me. But whatever they're doing, whatever they're not doing, the gap is getting wider. The gap is getting wider. So they might think they're waking up every day busting their arse, but Willie's getting further away. So. You know, that it is what it is.
It is interesting that stat you stripped out in regards to if you take out the Willie Mullins horses, how Ireland still dominate overall, broadly the same as you put it, Kev. But Brendan, like, let's get down to the nitty-gritty. I mean, I'm reluctant to be the one to think it. I don't think this, but surely it's not just a case of Irish people train racehorses better than British people. But now I'm starting to think that maybe that is the case, because what is going on here? Like, they're all available to all the stock is available to everyone. The money is there. There's money in Britain. There's money in Ireland, whichever way you want to look at it. But the results year in, year out now suggest that the Irish can get better results from racehorses than the British currently can at the top level. That's what we're seeing, right? That's what the results say.
Yeah, I mean it's hard to identify. I suppose it competing with Willie Mullins, a rising tide lifts all boats. We've seen this with Gerlines and Jessica Harrington, for example, on the flat competing against Aidan O'Brien. So if you happen to compete with them day in, day out, you just have to do everything incrementally a little bit better. Whereas if you don't have that dominant figure. No, I mean, Paul Nicholls, 14-time champion trainer, is that, but he's not dominant to the extent that Willie is. So maybe just the shadow that Mullins cast has meant that everyone has had to do everything a little bit better. But I suppose I don't know. Kevin touched on it there. I don't know enough about this sourcing of horses, because I don't see Willie Mullins buying horses at these boutique sales. So there was one that I see someone gave Ollie Murphy 200 bags to buy a horse. I mean, what a game this is. But anyway, there were plenty of English traders represented with buying these high profile pointers coming up for the boutique sale. But Mullins doesn't seem to get them there. I don't really know where he gets the horses, but clearly he's doing a great job of sourcing them and a great job of training them. And I'm probably the worst man to talk to about this, because I'm sure had we done a podcast back in the late 80s when Trapper John was holding up Irish pride, I'd be there. Well, we're doomed. It'll be forever British domination at Cheltenham Festival, but things do change. Dynasties do fall away, and maybe that it's very hard to predict the future. But at the moment, he's just getting stronger and stronger.
Yes, TC, obviously these numbers and this dominance not helped by, not for our, from our point of view, helped by the fact that Nicky Henderson had such a nightmare of a week. You were very keen to keep highlighting it throughout the daily shows, obviously, and then it, well, and the build up, and then it really did come to fruition at the worst possible time for the Henderson Yard. Your heart did go out for them. There's nothing they could seemingly do. They don't seem to have the answers. They tried to keep us all up to date with what was running, what wasn't running, but ultimately that really was very disappointing for everyone, wasn't it? Not to see those horses, the likes of Shishkin, Sergino, etc.
Yeah, just very briefly on, you know, the Willie Mullins domination, etc.
Yeah.
I've read it about three times now, that Julie Harrington statement.
Well, yeah.
I mean, I know it's kind of like the way she operates or the way the BHA PR operation, you know, goes about their business, but I read it two or three times and, you know, the words, you know, word salad, word soup, management speak. I mean, I just, honestly, it's just lacked any kind of like specifics, etc. So I was disappointed by that, but yeah, that's a secondary issue. And but that situation has been running on for 3 or 4 years. Yeah, Nicky Henderson, given that they were scoping all the horses. And blood testing all the horses before they ran. He had 16 runners at the festival and eight pulled up. Now, obviously, he had the odd good handicap placed horse. He had Lashier finishing third in the Champion Hurdle. But yeah, it was just, obviously, it was just a very sorry sight. I mean, we'd have loved to have seen Constitution Hill, Sergino, John Bond. You know, it's just a they're in a really bad space at the moment. They had a winner in a five runner race at Kempton on the Saturday. But obviously, that's a you're not going to say, you know, the worm has turned on the back of that. But no, his absence with his top guns obviously, you know, made it much easier for, you know, the Irish to go and do their thing and do it remarkably well.
Yeah, but
Yeah.
what was the thinking with his with I don't understand, like, because I've seen this before in yards where they say, look, there's clearly a problem in the yard, but we can't actually identify the yard, so we're going to shut it down for 2 weeks. Absolutely fine. But his seemed to be just some pot shots. Because I thought maybe it was the owners insisting, well, we want our horses to run at Cheltenham, but I don't think that was the case, because Joe Donnelly said, I leave it up to Nicky. And Nicky pulled out Sergino. Shishkin was fine. I think Shishkin and Champ actually, something did show up with them. So that was, but he pulled out Sergino, not a bother on him, according to the blood pictures, etc. But he ran City Chief for the same owner. So I don't really understand. What was he? Was he just kind of throwing darts at a wall and how, well, we'll run this, we won't run that? It seemed a very odd way of going about it to me.
I just assumed it was owner driven, but like you said, City Chief is an example. It could paint a bad picture in the respect is, you know, Sergino and the, you know, Shishkin, too valuable to risk, but and it gives the impression that you're running handicap as, oh, they're, you know, they're expendable or something like that. But that there were some I heard that he only ran Dodgy the Great, for example, because it was running for charity in, you know, in honor of, you know, Doddy Greer, etc. So I think there were some examples, allegedly, of owners saying, no, we're here, we want to run, the horse has scoped well, there's nothing wrong with his bloods, let's give it a chance. Now, it didn't really work out in the vast majority of cases, and once they did run, and some ran really deplorably, you know, like the likes of Biraco Lord and Jericho de Repenay. But yeah, it was, I wouldn't say your heart went out to him, but obviously you did feel for anybody who gets to the pinnacle of their sport and can't run their best horses.
Let's move on and talk all things Skelton, good, bad, and ugly. Obviously, excellent week for Team Dan and Harry Skelton at the Cheltenham Festival in terms of the horses, the winners, the grade two, the grade one winners, and of course Langer Dang as well, which we will get to shortly. But TC, should we kick off with the news that came out just the day before the festival kicked off that Dan Skelton had been fined £6,000 as a result, or well, after the result came out of the investigation into the George Gently sale dispute, essentially, and the BHA fined Dan Skelton £6,000. Now, this obviously was kind of a little bit missed in the media due to the hype around, oh well, the build up to the Cheltenham Festival. So it was slightly came out at the wrong time, I suppose, but that was because, of course, Dan went first with notifying everyone that that had come to an end. I got sent this message this morning, which I thought was quite interesting because it's slightly, it hadn't passed me by, but I hadn't given it much thought. But I got sent a message that said, good piece from Chris Cook on the Skelton case this morning. Absolutely pathetic, a fine of £6,000, which sends a clear signal that behaviour like this is basically fine. Time for much more like this in racing media. The cozy cartel that runs racing needs to be exposed, along with practices like this. Otherwise, more people will lose faith in the whole process and owners will be put off. Yet again, it's time for racing to join the 21st century. And I suddenly was like, oh God, I hadn't quite realized that this had landed so bad. Like this low-level fine had landed so badly off the back of this case, TC. What's your view on this? Is that message I've read out there, the general perception here, the general thought?
Well, I don't speak to enough people to say it was a general thought, but obviously Dan Skelton kind of like schooled the BHA by putting out his announcement on Sunday. The BHA then had to rush out the details of the case, the written reasons for the case on the Monday, given that Cheltenham was starting the next day. It was always going to be missed. I mean, on a quiet Sunday stroke Monday, this would have been a big news story, given that. The Sunday Times have been on the case, ever since George Gently was sold in 2016. But I'll just read out very quickly. I know we need to be a bit, brevity is the key when we're doing these kind of like reassessments. But I'll just read out one part of the ruling. It's Rule J24 provides that a person must provide full and accurate information to the BHA upon request and must not attempt to mislead the BHA. I accept on the evidence in light of Mr. Skelton's admission that Mr. Skelton's conduct was in breach of his obligations to the BHA in that he denied the existence of any documents regarding the payment he received following the sale of the horse at his first interview. He then went on to amend the invoice and provide the amended document to the BHA. I accept this was done for the purpose of seeking to mislead the BHA that the monies he received were described at the time of the sales as deferred training fees rather than the sale proceeds. He then, in his second interview, maintained the pretense that the amended invoice was in fact the genuine original invoice. Now, there's a further note as regards the penalty. As I say, in respect of the breach J24, which I've just read out in full. The financial penalty range is from £1,000 to £5,000, and the suspension range is from 1 month to 3 years. Entry point is £2,000 fine or 3 months suspension. Now, if you're telling me that a £6,000 fine is sufficient in this instance, where he's literally lied to the BHA, he's got an invoice, he's amended it, he's given it to the regulator. And then in a subsequent interview, he's insisted what he's given them is correct. If you're telling me that's a £6,000 fine, then I've got no idea what's going on in this sport. I really haven't. You suspect if that was a someone further down the rung of the training ranks, that you'd be looking at a suspension here. By the very own, what was open to them was far, far more than a £6,000 fine. I'm not decrying that Skelton had a brilliant, brilliant week. He plays the handicappers brilliantly. Like you said, Kevin said earlier in the week, last week, he said Jan Skelton's a brilliant trainer of handicappers. Yeah, he's not just handicapping horses. He's a brilliant trainer of the BHA handicappers as well, the way he gets his horses weighted. Now, honestly, anybody who reads that ruling from the BHA will come away from thinking, and like I said, I haven't read that in full. I know it was sent through to the group. If
Yeah.
Chris Cook's really gone to town on that and articulated what I'm thinking, then fair play to Chris Cook and fair play to the Racing Post, because I don't see anybody reading that and thinking £6,000 fine is sufficient, because it isn't.
Well,
Well, he's
Are you
already
care?
paid.
All right, Brendan. Yeah, go on.
Well, no, he's already paid a heavy enough price, though, Skelton, you would think, in terms of how long this has rumbled on and how damaging it would be if owners are think he's engaged in sharp practices and the drip, drip, drip. He'd be much better. Obviously, he thought that he didn't do anything wrong because he just fought it all the way until ultimately settling out of court. So you assume that, well, probably both parties were unhappy, but some sort of a compromise was reached with that settlement. And then he has to go on, and now this comes out. Now, it doesn't seem to have affected. He still seems to be able to attract high profile, wealthy owners. And as you mentioned, he's clearly a talented trainer, but it has cast a shadow over him. And I mean, I suppose they could take his license away for 3 months, but again, how effective is taking his license away for 3 months? Just being someone else's name for 3 months.
Yeah,
So
I'll take that. Well,
yeah, I mean, he's come out and said, you know, in hindsight, I'd have done things differently. Lessons have been learned, Brendan,
oh,
apparently.
good, good, good.
So
Okay.
at least we can say that, right?
Yeah,
Lessons
yeah.
have been learned. I mean, I can put my hands up and say that I do not know enough about the rules and regulations in regards to this case, Kev, in terms of the fine. But what TC's highlighted there is a little bit stark.
Incredibly lucky to keep his license, I'd say.
Right.
Would we even have got to this point if the owners hadn't persevered as much as they had, and went to David Walsh, and have had this case brought to wider attention? Like, this has been going on for years and years and years. They had to be very perseverant, and probably at great cost to themselves in terms of lawyering up, etc. Like, the BHA like made a woeful song and a dance a few years ago about the. They conducted a review into the buying and selling practices of bloodstock and racehorses, and I
I
tell you,
did,
there's
yeah.
still there's a lot of sourness on this side of the water still about how that played out and insinuations that were made, etc. And they come across a case like this and they deal with it like they did. Does that send a message to anyone? I don't believe it does. But we are where we are.
We are where we are indeed, and on this show as well. We've got to keep kicking. But whilst we're on Team Skelton, let's talk all things Langer Dang and his handicap mark. TC, do you want to? Was it you who wanted to pick this up, or you, Kev?
I just put, obviously, it's a major talking point, and
It is, yeah.
was it on the Wednesday? I mean, obviously I wasn't there, but apparently the biggest cheer of a quite a deflating Wednesday was when Langerdam won, and there was apparently there was a Dan Skelton to the stewards room, please, and apparently that got the biggest cheer on course of the day. That probably shows you how flat.
That happened. I
Did
cheered as well.
it? Did it? Well, obviously, like I said, just look at Lang. Look, it's so ridiculous that people just accept that now that one day is one day in the calendar for this horse. The way he's being campaigned, it's a measure of how far we've gone down the line that people just kind of like view this as a source of amusement. This horse on his previous start went off at 66 to 1 for a Lanzarote and goes off in single figures of the day and absolutely bolts up. Now, I wouldn't say the handicapper was, overly kind of like lenient because the horse has been running like a drain and he's gone from 147 to 141. But everyone assumes they know what's going on here. The handicapper has got it in his power to say, I don't believe that. Is very similar to what the handicapper said about the Kim Muir runner, whose name passes me by.
Good time,
Oh, good
Johnny.
time, Johnny. So if the handicapper's saying there is, I'm going to give you an extra £10 because I don't like the way your horse has been running and campaigned, and he drops his horse £6. I mean, nobody would really argue if he said, well, I'd actually wrote this down. You've been beaten 49 lengths, you've been pulled up, you've been beaten 29 lengths, and you've been beaten, and you've gone off 66 to 1 for a Lanzarote when you've beaten about two home.
I mean, they were quick.
147,
Yeah.
147, four runs, not buying that. You're running off 147. I'm not dropping you.
I mean, Kev, they were quick to tell us about the physical issues this horse has had, and they were quick to get in and reel off the problems they've had with him training wise, et cetera, the ulcers, da, da, da. We can all hear that interview, but we all also know what's happened here. Like, we don't need to pretend we don't.
Look, I'm not going to knock Dan. It's his job to play. It's his job to play the
Exactly.
game, but it's the regulator's job
Rather not knock him,
to
Kev, it's
police
more
it.
applaud him. He's
Yeah,
played the game brilliantly.
and I think more will start doing it because you don't get much of this sort of thing at this sort of level in the UK for the simple reason that there's loads of valuable handicaps like week in, week out, and it doesn't really often make economic sense to wrap one up for a season for one day. So many don't do it. In Ireland, it's a little bit different because there aren't many big handicaps and they're exceptionally difficult to win when there are some. But look, in this case, like you have to look at the stewards, you have to look at the handicapper especially, because like this you don't see, and I'm not, and I know it sounds like I know it sounds the way it sounds. But horses with this profile don't win handicaps. Irish trained horses with this profile don't win handicaps at Cheltenham because they're not handicapped the same way. Irish handicappers that win this meeting are on the up. No one really knows where their ceiling is, and they show improvement when they get there. But you look, I'm just glancing through the results here. A horse like Ballyadam, ran well in the whatever it was, the county last year. Has not operated at the same level since, has been doing his best, returns to run again this year. He's 1 pound lower, and that would be par for the course. And that lays into the Good Time Johnny thing, slightly different case. But the point is, if an Irish horse ran well in one of those handicaps and was wrapped up for the season to come back and have another go, when they get their weight 2 weeks before the Cheltenham Festival, the handicapper goes, "Do you think I'm an idiot?" And gives them something broadly similar to what they ran off last year. And everyone goes, "Well, of course he did. We're not idiots." But then you get a case like this. And throughout the week, and we've seen loads of it, where everyone knows what's going on. Everyone can second guess what's happening. But the handicapper literally puts his fingers in his ears, closes his eyes, and goes, "Oh, he's been out of form this season. Let's drop him every time he runs, including 2 pounds for when he burst a blood vessel." We all see
I
what's
think
going
the
on
thing,
here. And
yeah.
people say, "Oh, you're being parochial, it's one rule, you're just moaning because it's British trained horses." But you have to take each case and call it on its merits. And there is clearly a big divide in how this type of horse is treated, based on where they're trained. We can all see what's going on. It's transparent. They can do whatever they want, on their home playground, etc. But it does take away from what happens in the handicaps. Like the Irish, they won forward them, but geez, across the sample, like it was tough, and it was because the treatment for the last couple of years has been so deliberately skewed in one direction. And it, like I say, it is what it is. But people aren't stupid. We see what's happening.
And
No,
like I said, there's
last
no
comment on that.
decrying. Sorry, there's no decrying that he's a brilliant trainer. I mean, he did pretty much the same thing with Unexpected Party, which was totally unsighted in his previous two runs, got dropped and absolutely bolted up. So nobody's saying if Skelton can, get this kind of treatment and take advantage of it, full play to him. But as Kev said, the BHA handicappers have got to be a bit cuter, haven't they?
I think the
And
handicapping
look at
has
and if I
got
look
more
if I if I
visibility
owned a
to
horse
it.
in Ireland, if I owned a horse in Ireland rated 150 that didn't really have any prospects of being better than that, I'd be putting them on the boat straight away and sending them to Skeltham, send them to Harry Durham, Ben Pawling, someone like that, play the game for the year and give myself a chance of having a Cheltenham winner. Because the handicapper's gonna work with you rather than against you. The Irish handicapper does not work with you with Irish horses, and the British handicapper definitely does not work with Irish trained horses. But if you put them in training in the UK, you know that you can play the game and you will get rewarded.
I think that, yeah. I mean, the handicapper, is doing his job to drop horses when they've run their races and they haven't, and they're out of form and they've run their races, etc. It's the 2 pound drop for the time that he bled that those sort of moments are a little bit confusing, Brendan, because he's had a physical ailment that has meant that he hasn't run his race yet. He's still got a 2 pound drop.
Yes, which would tie into Kevin's point that there is a sort of not necessarily a policy, but a sort of a slight bias towards the home team in terms of handicapping. But at the same time, I don't hate that either because we need to have British winners at this festival somehow. So if you have to rig the game, go ahead.
Hey. Right, last but not least, just the general week at Cheltenham. Obviously, we have field sizes down 15% in the end, handicaps not filling, countless short price favourites, and then attendance figures dropped by over 10,000 less people. Over that number, actually, went to the Cheltenham Festival this year. Lots of bemoaning car parks, ticket prices, hotels, etc. TC. We definitely, a bit like how we started this show, we're not coming out of Cheltenham in a feel-good mood, and changes need to be made. But where do they start, TC, to get people, get the magic back?
The thing about all this, I mean, changing, getting rid of races, changing that. I said, where are these horses coming from? We had a lot of the handicaps not even filling, and that was before the non-runners because of the ground. And maybe the ground was a factor in, people confirming, but it's just the absence of horses that really worries me. Obviously, the car park situation was absolutely comical. If you're paying £20 to park and paying another £30 to get tractored out, I mean, come on.
Mad.
You are getting the piss taking out of you. And obviously the attendance figures were 46,000 on one day, and a friend was there in a box, and he was sending me pictures throughout the day about there was literally no queues, no crowds, anything on the 46,000 attendance figures is an absolute shocker, wasn't it? But from a whole raft of reasons, obviously, there's lots for the Jockey Club race courses and Cheltenham to consider. So, yeah, it wasn't a lot of metrics were worrying.
Yeah, there's like you say, TC, rightly say, there's a lot to consider coming out of this festival. If I personally could just make one change to, help not only the attendance figures, it would be as simplistic as, and I know it's not this straightforward, but reduction of ticket prices. I think, we live in a world where people want to spend their leisure pound well, and Cheltenham have got greedy. The ticket prices are too much. People don't want to come and pay that to also get to Cheltenham Park, like TC said, all of the stuff that goes with it. Just the cost of a race day has got too much. So, of course, 10,000 people aren't going to show up when they're counting their pennies at home. Brendan, last word to you here. What change would you make? All those issues we've rattled off, what one change would you make?
Get rid of the turners. I hate the turners, but again, I'm conscious of the fact, and we've talked about this before, that as Cheltenham put on more and more races and betrayed its core audience in terms of competition, the crowds just got bigger and bigger. So I'm very conscious of your point that it could just be down to ticket prices and customer experience. I'm kind of thinking almost more customer experience because I did see people tweeting, or I've had people talk to me because I said on a show a few weeks ago, well, I don't necessarily think the people who go to Cheltenham that admission is the cost of it is a massive factor. And they said to me, well, we can afford to go, but we can do other things with our money as well. And it becomes so stark how much more you can get for your money if you don't go to Cheltenham.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, like.
Yeah, so I'm inclined to think that, but I hope the authorities come to the conclusion that it's because people have finally got pissed off with these horses not running against one another. So we're gonna cut out a few races. I hope that's the case. And
Yeah, look,
Kev,
in
got a
short,
million.
Vanessa,
Yeah.
I'll be very quick here because everyone's sick of hearing me talking about this. Like, this needs to be a watershed moment for the festival, like on many fronts. I really did feel it this year, building into it, being there the Tuesday and Wednesday in particular. Like, there's an awful lot of frustrated and dissatisfied people in the tent, never mind outside the tent. And they got attacking this. They can't fluff it. I know from speaking to a heap of people from the BHA and the Jockey Club all last week, like there are really good people in there that know exactly what the issues are and know exactly how to tackle them. But it's just a case of getting everyone pushing in the same direction. It has to happen. I don't know. Like, those attendance drops for the last 2 years are pronounced. I know it was a big peak post-COVID, but this thing is trending the wrong direction, and they need to grab hold of it before it gets out of reach. And yeah, like I say, I think and I hope the changes will be made, but I just hope that those involved are brave enough to do it properly and to change enough and not just nip and tuck for the sake of saying they did something. Grab hold of this and fix it, because people's patience is nearly gone, I fear.
Last word to you on this, TC, before we wrap up, please.
Yeah, I've said that. I just want to. I think we've covered all of that. One thing I want to say is, it's an even kind of like sorrier tale in one respect. There's a lot of our listeners and viewers will know and be involved in what's called a Dandy Nap tipping competition on Twitter, run in memory of Grand Dan, who died from cancer. It transpires that none of the winners from last year have been paid out, and the person responsible is blaming a banking block for that. Now, hopefully, it gets resolved, because not only is it a blight on the memory of Graham, there's also some big figures involved here. The winner last year is due £17,000. So, hopefully, something can happen in the next few days that people get paid out, because if you got people kind of like not paying out, and it's for something like this, it's real low life stuff. It really is. So that's the Dandy Nap tipping competition. It won't be run this year because, obviously, the funds haven't been paid out from last year. But hopefully, someone can look at themselves and get this sorted.
Okay, well, we will continue to follow that story. Thanks for that update, TC. Right, boys, that wraps up the show then. Thanks, TC, Brendan Duke, and Kevin Blake. As always, thank you guys for listening week in, week out, and sticking with us throughout all of the Cheltenham Festival content as well. I hope you had a good week out there. I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope the aftermath, the low after a high of the Cheltenham Festival, is always a bit tough to tackle when everyone goes back to work on a Monday, but maybe this show will have jollied a few people along.
Vanessa, me and Brendan are about to go to the Curragh. There's eight races, there's 135 runners, and there's 2-year-olds running. So my mood is about to lift substantially. Thank you
Well,
very much. And I reckon that Brendan might be in the same boat
Kev,
as me.
Oh, there's some grand old stretch in the even. Yeah.
on the evidence of today's show, Kev, you're starting at a pretty low level of mood, so hopefully it will pick up by the end of the day. But on that note, guys, look, thank you very much. Join us again, listeners and viewers. Of course, we'll be back with Racing Only Better on Thursday. That was Wade In.